In this episode, we tell the money story of a professional who started his life in corporate America and decided to leave and begin a journey to help over 1 million people navigate the process of foreclosure. Stay tuned for the money story of DJ Alojo. Let's get started. Let's get
some money. From New Money, New Problems, it's the New Money, New Problems podcast, a show for successful professionals searching for the tools they need to navigate financial opportunities and obstacles they've never seen. Negotiating compensation, purchasing your first investment property, helping your family with money, the highs and lows of entrepreneurship. New money brings new problems that require new solutions. Join us as we work through them together. I'm Brenton Harrison, and this is the New Money, New Problems podcast.
Hello, this is Brenton Harrison of New Money, New Problems and your host for the New Money, New Problems podcast. I'm excited today to tell the money story of someone who I connected with very recently, but we were definitely supposed to connect. You all have heard on this podcast Courtney Hale multiple times, one of my best friends. You've heard Isaac Adai, and I have another friend, Donnie Bedney, whose opinion I trust. And all three of them kept telling me about their friend DJ that they said I like absolutely needed to meet. And it just so happened that when Courtney and Isaac told me, I had already talked about DJ with Donnie. So it was all these people who were trying to get us to connect, and we were finally able to do so at FinCon in New Orleans last year. He has a very unique story that I want to make sure we feature. So DJ, thank you for being a guest on the New Money, New Problems podcast.
Man, thank you so much for having me, Brenton. I really appreciate it and appreciate the opportunity to talk with your listeners today.
Absolutely, man. So let's jump into why we're connected in the first place. So after the break, we'll talk about what you do now. But when we first had this conversation, I said, you know, this is a Detroit number and I have a lot of family in the area. So you're a Detroit kid, right?
Man, born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, on the east side of Detroit, between Chalmers and Hayes on a street called Flanders. Just in case anybody wants to mess with my street credibility.
You know, there's something. My mom's side of the family is from Memphis. My dad's side is from the Midwest, Detroit, Milwaukee, Chicago. And there's something about Detroit and Memphis specifically where if someone says they're from Memphis or Detroit, like you didn't ask, but they have to tell you specifically what part of Memphis and Detroit they're from. Like you can't just be from Memphis. You're from South Memphis or you're from North Memphis. Man, what is it about Detroit that you feel the need to say you're from the East Side?
Hey, man, I think it's just growing up in the city. Like everybody knew East Side versus West Side. And then, you know, you had Eminem come out, talk about 8 Mile and all these random people talking about 8 Mile. So it's just one of those things where if you grew up in a D, you know kind of what it is. And it's a phenomenal city, had a phenomenal childhood and would not change it for anything.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about that childhood. What was life like growing up there?
So as you can probably tell by my name, DJ Alojo, that's not my government name. My government name is Ayodeji Alojo. And so my parents are Nigerian. I'm first generation American. And growing up in that household was phenomenal. We grew up in a middle-class household. But because my parents were first generation, they were stuck between that gap of doing what's best for their kids and their family as they grew their wealth in their life, but then also making sure that they sent money back home or helped other people have the same opportunities they were afforded. And so growing up between the ages of maybe 6 or 7, all the way to when I graduated from high school and left the home, we had anywhere between 4 to 10 additional people living in our house at any time. And my immediate family is just 6 people. I got 2 sisters, 1 brother, and my 2 parents. And so our house had anywhere from 10 to at some point, you know, 16 people in our house at one time. And we're talking about a, you know, 3-bed, 2-bath home on a basement. And so it was kind of tight sometimes.
We had some friends of mine, the Four Jewers, on, and we also had Isaac Adai on, and the Four Jewers and Isaac, they're all Ghanaian. And they tell a similar story, you know, hey, we're trying to get new school clothes. We're trying to look fresh and do all this stuff. And all this money is going back to Ghana. And for them, it was a little frustrating at times. Was it ever frustrating for you watching that? Or was there a point where it was frustrating, but you started to see why your parents were doing what they were doing?
It wasn't frustrating at the time because that's all I knew, right? And so for me, I just looked at it as like, I'm the youngest too, so that probably helped. I looked at it as like, every day I woke up was a new adventure. Like I had somebody to play with, we can go play ball, we can go up the street. And so from a lifestyle perspective, it was not frustrating at all. But where I did see it play out was in my parents' relationship. You know, I remember one time my parents were arguing about money, and my parents have very different money styles, if that makes sense. And they were arguing about money, and it was like late at night or something like that. And I remember vividly as a child, I went into their room and I yelled, I was like, shut up, I'm trying to sleep. And man, you know, 3 days later when I woke up from the concussion, you know, when I woke up, I realized early that they were so passionate because they were trying to do the best things for our family. And each of them had a different way of trying to achieve that goal, but they both had the same mission and passion. And so it taught me at an early age that you need to be passionate about kind of where you're taking your family, the goals you have, and the way in which you plan to achieve it, but it's needed.
So you go to Tennessee State. That's where you end up meeting Courtney and Isaac. What was your major?
I was e-business and supply chain management major. So it was in the College of Business.
Okay, that's your major. Tell me a little bit about what led to your post-TSU career. How did you get started where you were starting?
While I was at TSU, through the stuff I was doing with the honors program and through the stuff I was doing through the leadership development program I was in with Dr. Latham, I got an opportunity to get connected with Thurgood Marshall College Fund. And as part of Thurgood Marshall College Fund, one of the big sponsors for the Thurgood Marshall College Fund was a company called Gallup. And Gallup was actively recruiting talented individuals. But to get into Gallup is very difficult. They're a good consultancy. They do a lot of great stuff. If you think about the Gallup poll, same company. And it's just very, very difficult to get into their organization because they have a strengths approach and a model, and they have a lot of selection instruments. And so long story short, through my work with Thurgood Marshall College Fund, I was able to get an opportunity to go work for Gallup post undergrad. And I started off in their healthcare practice as a consultant and had a phenomenal career there. And it was just one of the best decisions I ever made.
So you have a phenomenal career there, but that's not what you do currently. So first, tell our listeners what you do currently, and I want to build to how you got there.
So currently what I do day to day, I am all things residential real estate, buy it, sell it, renovate it, hold it, do everything with it. But as part of that, one of my main missions is to help 1 million homeowners successfully navigate foreclosure. We deal with folks who are in all type of distress situations. You know, think about it, death, disease, divorce. And some of those situations you cannot change, or I cannot change. But the foreclosure situation is one that I've seen through my experiences that you can rebound from, that you can avoid, and that you can successfully navigate to get the best possible outcome. And so a lot of what I do today, in addition to the basic fundamental blocking and tackling of real estate, is helping their foreclosure situation.
The reason that I waited to say what you did or do today is I wanted people to see the progression of, you know, you were making good money, right? And I know that Gallup doesn't pay nothing. And you were making good money. You have the ability to easily just say, you know, I'm building for myself and my immediate family that next generation of wealth. But you decided to pivot and not just focus on your wealth, but also the wealth of others. So what started at Gallup that eventually led to you leaving and starting your own thing?
There are two fundamental things that happened that eventually led me to leaving. And first, I have to go all the way back to childhood. And in childhood, I remember when my parents used to give us money to put into the offering plate at church. And, you know, when you give a child money to put into the offering plate, there's not really an emotional connection with that, because basically it's going from your pocket to their hand to the offering plate. But one of the things that my parents instilled in me and my siblings was the act of giving the money, but it was the act of telling us that, hey, being a giver in any sense of the term is the best way never, ever to be broke or never, ever to feel like you are broke. And what they meant by that is that in order to give, you must always first feel like you have enough. And so that's where that giving spot. So if you can give when you're broke, that means you have enough for yourself because you're used to giving. And it only gets better as you get more. So that mentality was ingrained in me early and still sits with me today. The other part about it at Gallup, one of the things they talk about at Gallup are your strengths. And if you haven't taken the Strength Finder assessment, it's a great assessment to take to kind of identify what some of your strengths are. But one of the things they used to always preach to us is about how do you do something where you can become the best in the world at it, right? When you think about LeBron James and Michael Jordan on the basketball court, you think about some of the best players to ever play the game. When you think about, you know, yourself and what you do for folks, you think about one of the best people to ever do it. And so I had an epiphany at Gallup is that although I was very good at what I did, I was never, ever going to be the best consultant in the world. I was a good consultant, but I wasn't going to be the best. And what I saw in the real estate path I decided to take is that I felt like I had an opportunity to be the best in the world at one thing. And so I decided to take that opportunity.
This is the New Money, New Problems podcast, a show for successful professionals searching for the tools they need to navigate financial opportunities and obstacles they've never seen. We'll be right back.
Are you wondering what new money problems you might be overlooking in your financial life? If so, we've got great news. We've crafted the New Money, New Problems Gap Finder to identify potential weaknesses in your finances in areas ranging from budgeting, investments, insurance, and even the threat your extended family's finances could pose to your household. Please head to newmoneynewproblems.com/gapfinder to complete it today. Again, that's newmoneynewproblems.com/gapfinder to take the assessment.
You're listening to the New Money, New Problems podcast. Subscribe now at newmoneynewproblems.com. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Before the break, we were telling you a little bit, or DJ was telling you a little bit about his journey from the east side of Detroit to Tennessee State to Gallup, and then making the decision to launch out on his own. So DJ, you had gotten to the point where you realized that there was an opportunity that awaited you in real estate. What was that next step in seizing that opportunity?
So there was a couple things I did. One, I continued to work at Gallup for a significant amount of time because I love the people I work with. It was a great opportunity. And this was like a pet project that I worked on the weekends and the evenings and when I wasn't doing my full-time job because I wanted a proof of concept. I wanted to say, hey, if I'm going to step out and do this, I want it to work. And so I just built it in the background. It became what I was obsessed about when I was not working. And by doing that, it gave me the opportunity to make mistakes, not to have to put all my eggs in one basket. And it allowed me to perfect a system that could eventually scale once I had the time to do it. And that's what I did for a long time. And as a consultant, as you know, you travel a lot. So I was on boats, planes, and trains every week going around the country working with healthcare clients. And we were about to have our first child. And that timing lined up perfect with me saying, I don't want to be the dad who misses all those first child things or even second child things. And so I said, now is my opportunity. And what we decided to do is we decided to live off one person's income because my wife was working full time at the time and I was working full time. And so we said, hey, we're going to start living off my wife's income to help us. And then that way, once I decided to go full time, even if I didn't make any money or it failed, I would give myself a year to figure it out before I started to repivot. And that's what we did. And it worked out.
So you would acquire properties prior to quitting?
We acquired properties, but we weren't holding any properties at that time. We had mastered the process of buying a property, renovating it, and then selling it in order to generate income.
There's so many things that I want to unpack there, but I got to attack a few of them. The first is I hate when people recommend that people just like leap and a net will appear. You know, like you got to sacrifice everything. You got to put yourself out there with no safety net. You know, that is BS. And it is much easier to launch and sustain something when you have some reserves. You know, the second thing is it is completely okay to use that W-2 job to supplement something that you plan to do and build it up to the point where it's easier to leave, you know? And the third thing, we've had this conversation with friends of ours who want to jump into entrepreneurship. And I try to tell them like, it's a different lifestyle. But you know, you built yourself to the point where, and thankfully you didn't have to, but you had built a career to the point where, let's say that it didn't work out, you could have jumped right back into that career, right? You know, there's something to be said about putting yourself in a situation before you take the leap where you don't have to just say, oh, if this doesn't work out, I have nothing to go back to. I love the way that you did that. But, you know, the last thing, and this is what I'd like you to touch on even further, you know, people have no idea how hard it is to get financing for anything when you don't have a W-2 job. Can you talk about how having a salary either for yourself or for your wife or just your wife made it a little easier to have some entree into real estate?
It made all the difference. So there's a couple things and a couple pieces of the story that I probably didn't fully highlight. But when I was starting the real estate journey, I didn't start by myself. I actually had a business partner who had already done a couple deals. So like I was using his playbook. And we were working together, right? And so it was a situation where I was working with somebody along the way. And so it was like, I was only in the game 50% of it, and he was 50%. And so like, we had the double coverage of like, okay, we both mess it up, then we both have some support, right? And so that was huge there. And his expertise mixed with my expertise helped us, you know, grow and allowed us to do different things. But then the other part about it is that the W-2 was so significant because when I started in real estate, this was during the time when the real estate market had crashed. And so it wasn't the real estate market that we know today where everybody wants to be in real estate and you have bigger pockets, you have YouTube, you have all these things where you can get all this information. It was kind of no man's land and people were just trying to figure out what to do. People were licking their wounds who had lost a lot of money, and houses that you see now that are $1 million houses could have probably been sold for like 250 or 300. And so it wasn't the panacea that everybody, you know, envisions now. It was much more scary. And banks didn't want to lend to you unless you had income. And so for a long time, my W-2 along with my wife's W-2 was the thing that allowed us to get loans, the thing that allowed us banks to finance us. In addition to that, I remember one of the houses that we purchased after I went solo was only in my wife's name because I didn't have any income. I had a lot of debt, not consumer debt, but real estate debt related to the business. And it just made sense to put in her name because she didn't have a lot of debt and she had a W-2. And so they were able to do the loan with no problem. And so those things are so helpful as you think about stepping out there into the unknown. The other part that people don't talk about is not just the financing of it, but it's the ability to be able to breathe. One thing that you have to know is when you start your own business or you do something where the income is not a steady income stream, it's an inconsistent income stream, and you don't know when and if you're going to get paid, you do not have the ability to make mistakes. And you are forced to make bad decisions if the income comes in later than you expect. Whether it be selling something of value too soon, which I've done numerous times, or not having the ability to ride a storm or be grounded in a storm and let it pass through. And so that's so important that you have to have a foundation where you either have a huge reserve or you have continuous income when you start anything entrepreneurial.
There's a concept that one of the people who mentored me calls, you know, tuition into the school of experience. And you're paying, right? This is not a benefit. Getting experience in the field of your choice, it costs you something, either financially, mentally, whether it's stress. Like, you've done some things that this was a mistake. that happened to you, but it had to happen to you. It needed to happen to you for you to get that experience. You needed to move forward. What's an example of some tuition that you paid into the school of experience?
A lot of sleepless nights, right? But I think the thing was delayed gratification. I think that was the tuition, because when I left and I look at some of my colleagues, and some of my colleagues have gone on to do phenomenal things, I took a lot of steps back. And when I say not back, steps to the side in order to take a huge step forward. And that was delayed gratification with the cars we drove, with the way we invested, with the vacations we took and stuff like that. But it allowed me to put myself in a position where now it's a lot easier to say, if I want to upgrade, I have the ability or luxury to. The other thing when you talk about tuition was, I missed out on so many different opportunities that could have taken me to a new level financially because I didn't spend enough time educating myself and getting better at my craft because I was so focused on the day-to-day, right? And so it was a duality of like, yes, the day-to-day has to get done, but not understanding the higher game that's being played in the real estate world made me miss out on opportunities because, again, I sold assets too early. I missed out on good opportunities that would have paid off great dividends. And as I look back, I'm not mad or sorry about those things, but hindsight's always 20/20. And I just see where those experiences now have shaped me, where I look at the market very differently.
Taking that experience and then deciding to pay it forward, not pay it forward. Like, this is what I love about what you're doing. There are tons of people out there who tell people how to get rich in real estate, and there is nothing wrong with that. You are building a future for yourself in real estate, but you are also going to tell people how to save themselves from foreclosure, right? You're going an extra step and you're targeting people who are not necessarily going to make you rich, right? It's a passion project. Why have you decided to do that?
The level I'm at now, it's very hard to see people day to day, those who have worked their whole lives and be in a situation where they've miscalculated how much they're going to need in retirement, or they had a life event happen to them. And now they are in a position where they have to sell their home and have to rebuild their lives, but they don't have as much life left as they've already lived. And in my work, I see those people every week. And it's hard to look at them all the time and say, hey, I'm sorry, but this is just your reality. And so after having that conversation thousands of times in my career, I said, how do you help these people in a different way? How do you let them know the best way to proceed, the best way to maximize maybe the last bit of equity they have in their house, or think about their situation in a different way when you don't have hours and hours and hours to spend with them? And my best thought was put in a book and tell them on a podcast, right? That was the best advice I had. And so that's all I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to help folks and share the story of what things you can do when you face a challenging financial situation that you never expected to be in. And for me, it's what fills my cup. It's what gets me up every day, what gets me motivated. You know, I'm still a deal junkie. I still love, you know, transacting in the real estate world. But what really gets me excited is helping a single mom who her home is her most valuable asset. And now she's in a situation where she may have to sell the house, giving her strategies and tips where either she can sell it and maximize her return so she has enough of a nest egg to build again, or helping her stay in her house and navigate the choppy waters and build for a future.
I don't think it's a large leap to connect the dots between growing up in a household where your family cared enough to let you have 10 extra people in your house, and then realizing that that might connect with you in your adult life, having a desire to reach back and help others. You know, that leads me to some questions that we ask of all our guests. There are things that we bring with us from childhood financially that benefit us, They work well in our pursuits, whatever they may be, professionally, personally. What are some of the positive experiences about your relationship with money as a child that you bring with you today into adulthood that you think serve you well?
There are two things. I think one is the ability to be generous at any income level. The other thing is the ability to work hard.
Well, those are some good things to have. But, you know, there's a flip side to this coin. There's something that we saw when it comes to money as a child that maybe we misinterpreted. Maybe we interpreted exactly how it occurred, but it's something that now works against us financially. Maybe we know it exists, but it's just it has to be overcome. It has to be accounted for when it comes to understanding how you are with money in a negative way. When you look at your next generation, what are some things that you know about yourself and how you deal with money that you hope that they leave on the shelf and don't pick up?
Man, you know, I feel like my wife is looking at me asking me like, hey, what's my biggest problem? Right. Like, she's like, I can tell you what it is. Right. But I think that the thing that I would not like my kids to get that I do sometimes is I can be a little rigid in my approach to planning, and I don't like to change sometimes. And what I mean by that is that once I'm on board with the plan, I'm full steam ahead, and I'm full steam ahead till the plan is executed. But sometimes you need the ability to say, hey, this plan's not working, or we need to modify or adjust or change the plan. And I think sometimes in my career, and in me and my wife's ability to grow our wealth together, I have been committed to a plan and I probably should have adjusted course quicker. And so I hope their ability to course correct is quicker than mine and better than mine.
I'm really glad my wife isn't listening to this recording, because if she had heard rigid, I'm sure she'd be looking at me saying, because, you know, that's me as well. I like to say, you know, some things are a zero sum game. You either did it or you did not. There's no half doing it. And let's just say she doesn't appreciate when I say that, to say the least. But DJ, it has been a pleasure having you on the podcast. But before we go, I need to make sure that people know how to reach you and listen to, see, and read your content. You just had a book that came out. So tell us about the platforms where we can find you.
I'm all things The Foreclosure Fix. It's The Foreclosure Fix on YouTube. It's TheForeclosureFix.com. And my new book called The Foreclosure Fix, 12 Proven Steps to Beat the Bank, Escape Foreclosure, and Turn Your Property into a Profitable Asset is out now. So please check us out at TheForeclosureFix.com. It's on Amazon and everywhere else you get your great books. So definitely check it out if you know someone facing foreclosure or anybody in a challenging financial situation.
Well, we appreciate you being on the podcast. If you are listening, we're going to make sure that we link to all of these things in the show notes. And we're also going to link to the StrengthFinder assessment that he referenced earlier before the break. DJ, thank you so much. We appreciate you being a guest on the New Money, New Problems podcast.
From New Money, New Problems, this was the New Money, New Problems podcast. A show for successful professionals searching for the tools they need to navigate financial opportunities and obstacles they've never seen.